Heat Thoughts for a special AeroCast. I'm Pete Combs, and this is Aero News. It's Tuesday, June 13th, 2006. This is ANN's 500th AeroCast, a special moment for all of us here. It's a sign of our commitment both to aviation news and to this medium, so we thought we'd take this opportunity to talk with one of the deep thinkers in aviation and aerospace, Dr. Peter Diamandis. He's the founder of the XPRIZE and Zero-G, which is about the closest you can get to going into space without really being there.
Zero-G was one of these overnight successes after 12 years of hard work. We're now in our second year of operation. We've done our 70th zero-G flight, flown about 2,000 customers, and we're just getting ready now to add a dedicated airplane. We have two airplanes down in Miami that we fly out of Fort Lauderdale and now the shuttle landing facility, and we're about to add Las Vegas as a West Coast base of operation. So we're excited about that. We'll keep the two part-time use airplanes that fly cargo during the week and zero-G on the weekends and add a dedicated airplane that will be based on the West Coast for dedicated airplane flights, zero-G flights.
Any surprises on 2 years of zero-G operations?
Just that it's fun. The 40th zero-G flight for me as the first.
Oh, amen.
We're having excellent growth in the marketplace. We are beginning to do some work for the government as well, for NASA. Our hope eventually is to offer the agency a lower-cost price they could do it themselves. And just folks are enjoying it. We have people now planning zero-G sports and TV shoots and movies, and it becomes a great product for giving people this new experience.
Oh, it's an amazing event. Even after going through several hundred parabolas with you guys, it's still just as much fun now as it was 2 years ago. Pretty cool stuff. Okay, let's talk about XPRIZE. This is pretty much your backbone to all these dreams that have come about. What is happening with XPRIZE itself these days?
Well, the organization's grown. We're up to about 35 people now, growing up to about 50 by the end of the year. And the reason it's growing is that we have, in addition to our space activities, we're also getting ready to roll out an automotive XPRIZE and a genomics XPRIZE this year. Can't speak much about them, but the goal in automotive is going to be a new generation of very high efficiency, low carbon emission vehicles. Something that really changes the cars that we drive today, and using the PRIZE method to drive innovation and allow entrepreneurs really to get a jump start on the existing industrial base. And genomics, we are looking to bring about rapid genome sequencing, a PRIZE that would get individuals or companies to really be able to sequence an individual's genome very quickly. That would revolutionize medicine, and we're excited about the effects on the world that this can have. But, you know, for the audience listening to this, it's all about the XPRIZE Cup. You know, we had the success of the Ansari XPRIZE in 2004. We did a one-day demo of the XPRIZE Cup in Las Cruces last October, and this year we're thrilled that we're going to be having the 2006 XPRIZE Cup really be a mega global event. We're going to be announcing shortly that we'll have something like $3 million in cash prizes this year, and our major event is going to be the Lunar Lander Challenge. We expect we've had interest from 40 different companies interested in competing. We hope that we'll have anywhere from 8 to 10 vehicles actually built by this October that are able to do vertical takeoff, go to altitude some number of hundreds of feet, hover, and then do precision landings on simulated lunar surfaces. Refuel and then go back to the original launch pad. So we're talking about as many as 20, 30, 40 rocket-powered events this October 18th through the 21st.
It's going to be quite something. I thought last year rocked pretty well, but I am really excited about what's coming up for this year.
Well, our vision is really to build the Oshkosh of space, you know, the place that you and your family goes to see the spaceships, touch them, maybe sign your ticket to fly, watch them fly in front of you, something that becomes a global event that people put on their calendar a year in advance.
The window to the future.
I sure hope so.
What's the latest on rocket racing?
Great stuff. Rocket racing is moving forward. We have the X1, we have the Mark 1 X Racer under development. This is a Velocity airframe. Zoom, as you well know, you introduced us to the folks at Velocity, and X-Core is developing the engine. It's a 1,500-pound liquid oxygen kerosene engine for rapid refuel. The folks at X-Core are able to demonstrate fueling 250 pounds of cryogenic liquid oxygen in under a minute. Unbelievable. The new 1,500-pound engine has done two test firings so far, and we're hoping to get the vehicle airborne this summer in time to debut it this October 20th and 21st at the Space Flight Exposition in Las Cruces.
Well, I hope you're keeping my seat warm.
Sure am.
Boy, that's of all the flights that I'm likely to make any time in the not-too-distant future, that's the one I'm most excited about. We're really looking forward to seeing what comes up all that.
So it's an exciting time, you know. Space Adventures, where another company had co-founded and rejoined the board there, we announced Anoush Ansari as a space tourist. Of course, Charles Simone, one of the early Microsoft pioneers, also was aboard an orbital flight. So there's a tremendous amount of interest in that arena as well. So I think we're, you know, 2006 to the rest of this decade is going to be really an exciting period of birth for this commercial space industry. It's a time that a lot of dreams are going to be made true, and where folks with a lot of money can finally see that instead of investing in sort of terrestrial businesses, there's a chance for them to make their childhood dreams come true and invest in building some space companies.
We'll hear more of this interview in just a moment. But first, this special 500th AeroCast is brought to you by Aircraft Engine Services, makers of the aluminum V220 and V300T engines.
How up to date is your aircraft engine? Automotive engineering has advanced so much over the past 30 years that you almost never have to raise the hood. Why can't an airplane engine be just as simple and just as reliable? Now it can. Check out the new V220 and V300T from Aircraft Engine Services. The all-aluminum construction of the V220 and V300T gives these engines the best power-to-weight ratio in their class. Earlier aluminum block engines suffered from excessive wear unless they were protected with heavy steel cylinder liners. In the V220 and V300T, each cylinder bore is surface-coated with Nicosil, an electro-deposited nickel coating containing hard silicone carbide particles. The benefits of a better power-to-weight ratio include increased range and higher useful loads, with less of a trade-off between fuel capacity and passenger or cargo carrying capacity. The AES V220 and V300T, as simple as a car's engine, but oh so much more fun to drive. Check us out on the web at VAircraftEngine.com or call us at 321-268-3718. Aircraft Engine Services, the shape of things to come.
Do you think the only time your certified airplane can be equipped with a full emergency airframe parachute recovery system is when it rolls off the production line? Well, think again. BRS is the aftermarket leader in providing full airframe recovery parachutes for certified airplanes like yours. We manufacture the reliable parachute systems you need for a full range of aircraft, including Cessna. For your own safety and for that of your family members and loved ones, get the extra life assurance of a BRS airframe recovery parachute. In the event of an emergency, you'll never question the security of having one final option. Call BRS at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
Welcome back to our 500th Aero News Podcast. Jim Campbell's interview with XPRIZE founder Peter Diamandis.
Well, we see you at Oshkosh this year, Peter.
Absolutely. I'm going to be giving a Fear in the Woods presentation along with Eric Lindberg. He and I are going to do our duet on Wednesday night. And then I'll be giving a few 10 talks over the course of the few days. XPRIZE will be there. Rocket Racing League will be there. And it'll be a fun week.
We're all looking forward to that, and especially we're looking forward to covering it. I think the Theater in the Woods presentation is going to be particularly interesting. And you teamed up with Eric is a no-miss. That's going to be a lot of fun. Okay, that's where we're at. Peter, we've got a space industry that is all geared up, not quite sure where to go. We've got a number of governmental agencies. They're kind of in the same place. You've provided more vision in a few years than seems to have been found in the last couple of decades. Pull out your crystal ball. Where are we going? Where should we be going? What are the problems? What do you see? And more important, if Peter Diamandis got put in charge of the space industry, both governmental as commercial, what would you be doing?
First thing I do is I get someone to run the government side because I have no interest.
Smart man.
It is a incredibly exciting decade ahead, and why it's exciting is something very unique in time and in history. For the first time ever, it used to be that doing anything in space required the capital and resources of a government. It was 5% of the gross national product of the U.S. and 400,000 employees to get us on the moon. Now you can do things in the private space arena with the capital of a single individual and a group of 20 people. There are enough wealthy individuals from the Jeff Bezos, the John Carmacks, the Paul Allens, Larry Pages, and so forth out there that have made their money in the computer or dot-com revolution, were originally passionate about Apollo and Shuttle and never saw the vision fulfilled that we were all promised, and now saying, as I myself, it's time to take it back in our own hands, and let's do it ourselves. So that wealth is there, and the computational abilities, the ability to go into your garage or your hangar and build some private hardware, it's an exciting period of time. I think we are going to see the suborbital business sell their first tickets in 2008 and begin to grow rapidly through 2010, 2012. I think we'll see the first new orbital vehicles for passengers at the turn of the decade, 2010 and 2012. And once we have private ships taking us to orbit, that's when it starts to become interesting, because I want you to imagine that you have enough capital that you can fly two or three flights to orbit, stockpile fuel on orbit, and they make a beeline for the moon. The things that we fight wars over on Earth, and metals and minerals and real estate and energy, the things that we, really go to war over, are in near infinite quantities in space. And I think that the plans are being laid right now by different individuals around the planet to say, hey, let's go capture an asteroid. How much would it really cost to go and land on the moon and plant the flag? Because the difficulty of going and building a North Sea platform that has to withstand huge temperature shifts and literally go and drill hundreds and thousands of feet underwater into the sea floor and then extract oil and ship it back, that is no more difficult, or in fact I would think it's probably more difficult than some of the private space expeditions we're talking about. So it is possible for large corporate entities, wealthy individuals, to have the vision to go and explore and colonize space. And I think that's going to happen soon. And along with that economy, that economic engine driving us forward, will be the first permanent private human installations off Earth, in low Earth orbit, on the moon, in colonies that are built. We can start to really dream about that. And make it happen.
What's your time frame on permanent habitats in space? I mean, is this something that we're going to see, our kids are going to see?
I believe it's something we are going to see, unless we screw it up royally in some other ways. You've got folks like Bob Bigelow right now, who's made his billions in the hotel industry, committing huge amounts of money to building the first private orbital hotel. His concept that the intellectual property he bought from NASA for inflatables, because NASA was not willing to take the risk to do those, and of course we all know that story. If you don't take the risk, you don't have breakthroughs. So Bob very smartly purchased the technology to build inflatable space structures, future hotels that have huge volumes. And I think those are going to materialize. And we have enough wealth on the planet now for those who will want to go and take those trips. The time frame for those is next decade. I think this decade is the is really giving birth to the suborbital industry, which will teach us, which will learn about how to do efficient operations, which will build the first business models, provide the first profits. It's very much akin to the early days of the PC, where Pong was the first application people said, what can you possibly do with this computer that you play a game on? What a waste of time. Well, of course, we all know where that went. And so suborbital is the first step. Orbital will get us the next layer and get us access to the resources that are out there. And eventually, independent economies in space. There will be individuals on this planet who've got tens of billions of private dollars, some of which will finally say, I want to build my own space colony, and why not?
We'll hear the rest of this 500th AeroCast in just a moment. You're listening to Aero News.
Finally, aviation headsets have evolved. Clarity Aloft is the next generation of headset design for a number of reasons. Clarity Aloft headsets are known for the superior clarity of sound. They're lightweight but rugged enough to meet military specifications. Best of all, they boast better noise reduction than ANR in the speech frequencies that matter most to you. For more information, call 612-747-3197 or check out the innovative Clarity Aloft headset on the web at clarityaloft.com. Higher, faster, farther, safer. Those are the watchwords of Columbia Aircraft Manufacturing's new generation of personal airplanes. The Columbia 350 and 400 are now available with either an Avadyne or Garmin electronic cockpit. The new Garmin G1000 equipped Columbia 350 and 400 have just been introduced with the new ReadyPad. While the G1000 panel integrates all navigation and flight instruments into two high-resolution screens, incorporating GPS, nav, comm, autopilot, transponder, and flight director into one easy-to-use package. To schedule a demo flight in a Columbia 350 or the turbocharged 400, call 541-318-1144 or check them out on the web at flycolumbia.com.
We're back now to wrap up our 500th ANN podcast. Today's special feature, Jim Campbell talking with XPRIZE Foundation President Peter Diamandis.
What about the tourism industry in the short term? There's talk of, within the next 2 to 3 years, real paying passengers. We obviously know about the Rutan project with Virgin Galactic, but there are others on the horizon as well. Can you talk a little bit about that and the timetable and the realities of what's coming?
Sure. Well, right now we do have a real space tourism industry. It takes a number of different forms. It's everything from the Air and Space Museum, the Smithsonian, that is the most visited museum on the planet, the Kennedy Space Center, the company there, Delaware North, that does an excellent job, and at NASA Johnson, Space Center Houston. These are organizations that bring in tens of millions a year in revenue. Zero Gravity Corporation has established a great beachfront in parabolic flight, flew 2,000 customers. Our goal is to get to 10,000 customers a year. And beyond that, we then enter the suborbital marketplace. We've got, as you well know, Spaceship Two. Jeff Bezos of Amazon fame has a company called Blue Origin. He's not announced anything fully, but we know he's building a vertical takeoff, vertical landing, suborbital, human-rated ship that he wants to fly out of Texas. And then most recently, the Ansari family teamed with Space Adventures to build a vehicle, the Ansari Spaceship Alliance, out of Russia, built using basically the Russian Space Agency and some of the large machinist bureaus there to build a vehicle that would operate in Asia and Europe. Unfortunately, in the United States, the State Department, while it protects us many ways, also is a great inhibitor. So spaceships built in the U.S. are going to have a hard time being exported outside the U.S. So that creates a market for basically a Boeing-Airbus-like relationship where you're going to need a non-U.S. manufacturer to service the markets overseas. I might also mention, by the way, there's a company called Rocket Plane out of Oklahoma, run by George French, which is well capitalized and moving forward. And then John Carmack out of Dallas, who is Armadillo Aerospace. So there's really, you know, on the order of, I would guess, 5 to 8 viable contenders out there that will represent the first generation of commercial players that it's going to be up and going by, you know, probably 2008 we'll start to see the first test flights of these commercial vehicles, and 2009 the first tickets being sold, and, you know, hopefully we'll break, hopefully by 2010 we'll surpass the number of private people going into space, we'll surpass the number of government astronauts ever flown. In 40 years we'll do it hopefully in 2.
That would be a fine, fine ambition. Finally, few visionaries get to see their visions take form. You're one of the fortunate few. You satisfied?
I'm incredibly satisfied, but I should say I'm incredibly happy, and I'm never satisfied is the reality of it. It's the next major milestone for this industry is for it to become profitable. You know, we need the first of those companies to become profitable and go public to create what I call the Netscape event, where people start really investing capital heavily that will fuel some of the breakthroughs that are out there to be had. Capital markets have always viewed space as something that is either a DOD government marketplace or in Hollywood, and never the commercial space arena. And so I'm hoping that we'll see the first real profitable and then public offerings that will bring Wall Street to the table. One of the things I've been excited about is really trying to marry the entertainment industry and the tourism industry to spaceflight. So you see things like Zero-G, Rocket Racing, the XPRIZE Cup, Space Adventures, and those that borrow on well-understood, well-structured entertainment and tourism vehicles to empower rocket engineering.
You've been listening to a special feature from Aero News. On the web, you'll find us at aero-news.net. I'm Pete Combs. Thanks for listening to our special edition 500th AeroCast, and we'll see you at the airport.